Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Monday, May 13, 2013. Paging Shakira to the nearest white courtesy telephone. You're needed in Washington, Shakira.
Up in here tonight. No fighting.
We got the refugees.
No fighting. No fighting. Shakira, Shakira.
I never really knew that she could dance like this.
And maybe you can bring Wyclef Jean with you, huh? The Obama White House is embroiled in a number of disputes that are turning highly political, and the right wing is talking impeachment. And the president held a news conference today. He's holding more press conferences this year, but the last two have been because of visiting dignitaries. First, the Prime Minister of South Korea, and now David Cameron, the Prime Minister of Britain. But in these White House news conferences, I give the media credit, they are not limiting their questions to polite commentary about the guest of honor. So the president fighting back today, and in my view, he got it wrong on two key counts. So, he declares that Libya, the Benghazi story, is a sideshow, and that any accusation of a cover-up by his administration defies logic. And I think he is playing this 180 degrees wrong. The other issue we'll air out in a moment is about the IRS, which he is attacking. And I think he's got that one wrong. First, about Benghazi. Come on, Mr. President, there has been a cover-up. What I said on Friday still stands. The cover-up was designed to obscure the role of the CIA in the outpost in Benghazi. 23 of the 30 survivors who were flown out of Benghazi after last September 11's attack were CIA people. And in my view, that's what has caused the cover-up by the White House. That and the attacks by Republicans that started before they even knew that Ambassador Chris Hill had been killed. If you go back to last September 11th, we're in the middle, the heat of the political campaign, the presidential re-election. And for whatever reasons, both sides kind of went silent on September 11th. But right after midnight, Reince Priebus, the chair of the Republican National Committee, started tweeting, and we didn't even know what had happened in Benghazi except that there had been an attack on this facility. And so immediately this became politicized. And I understand that the White House hunkered down, they massaged the talking points, and that's what we learned from Friday's information. And so, in this case, I think that the president could defuse the attacks from the radical Republican right by saying, you know what, due to considerations of national security and the secret operations of the CIA, yeah, we shaded the reporting, we shifted the information, and it was scrubbed by the State Department, the White House, and the CIA. That was a mistake. Let's move on. Now, I don't know if that would cause the Republicans to disengage their teeth from his ankle. But to me, that is the truth, and that's how the president ought to be dealing with it. Then we have Friday's revelation, and the president says he heard about the IRS targeting of Republican and right-wing political groups who had applied for nonprofit status, that he heard about it from news headlines. That's not credible, Mr. President, even if it's true. And he is attacking the IRS, saying the charges are outrageous and anyone found to be guilty of such actions should be held accountable. I've got no patience for it, he said. I will not tolerate it. Well, Mr. President, I hate to be doing your damage control for you, but it occurs to me that there is a logical basis to examine carefully the applications of any political group, and especially right-wing groups, trying to hide behind nonprofit status through the IRS as a way to obscure their donors and pay for all those negative ads that wind up on television. And did the president only find out about this on Friday? I don't know. That may be true. Certainly, people operate in a political manner and do things that the president doesn't know about. But like I said, I think the president is playing each of these in the wrong way, and it really will keep both of them alive. And the IRS issue invokes Nixon's enemies list and wrongdoing of the past. And somebody needs to point out that the money that was flowing into, starting in 2010, then in 2012, Crossroads GPS, these other conservative groups, the phony nonprofits set up by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, they spent hundreds of millions of dollars. And they're not nonprofits. I mean, Karl Rove took millions of dollars in fees and commissions from Crossroads GPS. And so I think there's a whole legitimate issue related to the IRS investigation of these applications. And the bottom line may be that it was done for political reasons, partisan political reasons. It would not be the first time. But again, I think the president is spinning this in a way that will simply keep these issues alive. And I haven't had a chance to hear more about this news conference, so it's possible that this issue was covered, but I doubt it. We learned today that the Justice Department secretly obtained 2 months of telephone records of reporters and editors at the Associated Press in what the news organization's top executive called a massive and unprecedented intrusion into how news organizations gather information. And at issue here goes back to April and May of 2012, when the Obama administration, right around the first anniversary of the reported killing of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan, got the AP to sit on a story for a few days about a foiled terror plot based in Yemen that allegedly stopped Al-Qaeda from detonating a bomb on an airplane bound for the United States. Now, the story itself has many dubious angles, but the AP was doing its best to report this. And this kind of wiretapping, or it's not actually a wiretap, they grabbed the phone records so that they could go look for the intercepted phone calls over at the NSA's huge database. And so the collection of these phone records, without, at least from our knowledge, a subpoena, is a major violation of the constitutional rights, the First Amendment rights of the Associated Press. And this is much more important than Benghazi and the IRS flap combined. We don't know if they used the self-executed warrants by the FBI, the so-called national security letters, or some other manner of acquiring these phone records. But this really displays the lack of transparency by the Obama administration, their attempt to keep secret things that are no longer secret, and their willingness to invade the constitutional rights of journalists in order to try to control information release and flow. And this is one that the president needs to address squarely. We'll see if and when he does. And another issue that may or may not have come up in the news conference today with David Cameron is the continuing hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, by prisoners. And today, in an in-depth interview released to our subscribers at peterbcollins.com, investigative reporter Jason Leopold shares the information that he delivered in a report at aljazeera.com today regarding the SOP, the standard operating procedure for force-feeding the prisoners who refuse to eat. As we've discussed, the force feeding of prisoners is considered a war crime, and under international law, prisoners of war have the right to refuse food. it is very clearly a right. And yet we're told that we have to keep these people alive so that they can live in limbo on an indefinite basis in our custody, even the 86 men who have been cleared for release for 3 years and in many cases far longer. In this excerpt from our lengthy conversation with Jason Leopold, he talks about the role of medical professionals, doctors and nurses, who have given up their ethical standards by carrying out orders that are based on security and not the medical interests of the person they are observing, the prisoner.
You know, we talked about the independence issue, okay? So the doctors, the physicians, the nurses, they're not acting with independence. They're simply following these guidelines. They're not telling the prisoners, hey, listen, you know, if you don't eat, this is what can happen. There are other alternatives, that you can be on a, you know, pseudo hunger strike. They're simply looking at the SOP, or perhaps they studied the SOP and they're just following it. So they're not using their own medical judgment, Peter. They're not, you know, using their own skills to inform and guide and advise them on what's happening. And that's very, very important to note, because again, what are they there for? They're there to carry out the policy of force feeding.
There's much more with Jason Leopold in our in-depth interview for subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. Jason has returned to Guantanamo. I believe he flew out today and will be there this week. We hope to debrief him on his return. And if you're not a subscriber, you can hear the interview for just a dollar. Go to peterbcollins.com and take out a 24-hour pass. You can subscribe for $5 a month, $50 a year. And if you take out a new annual subscription for $50, I still have a few copies of Sibel Edmonds' important book, Classified Woman, and I'd be happy to send a copy to new annual subscribers. All the information, just follow the links under my picture on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. And speaking of Sibel Edmonds, I want to recommend to you a video. It's about 11 minutes long, and I'm going to link to it in the show file, link to this podcast at peterbcollins.com. My colleague, James Corbett, describes in more detail the murky links of former CIA operative Graham Fuller to Ruslan Sarny, the loudmouthed uncle of the brothers who were suspects in the Boston Marathon bombing case. And Corbett does a great job of defining who Graham Fuller is, how he has marveled at the CIA's ability to use Muslims as they did with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and as Sibel Edmonds believes has been done in the Caucasus, and the connections of Graham Fuller to Ruslan Sarny are very significant, even though Fuller denies that they are. At the Supreme Court today, it wasn't a perfect case, but it was a perfect victory for Monsanto. As the court ruled unanimously, with an opinion written by Obama appointee Elena Kagan, that farmers cannot use Monsanto's patented genetically altered soybeans to create new seeds without paying the company a fee. Now, Justice Kagan says that this is a very limited ruling. And to be fair, the farmer in this case, Vernon Bowman of Indiana, apparently was trying to cheat. He had signed a contract for his main crop of soybeans with Monsanto. But for a second crop, he went to a local grain elevator that had a mix of seeds that he suspected many would be of Monsanto's Roundup Ready genetically modified design. And these seeds from grain elevators are usually sold for animal feed or industrial uses, but Bowman planted them. He sprayed them with Roundup. Many of the plants survived, which confirms that they were Roundup Ready. So a federal judge ordered him to pay Monsanto $84,000, and the Supreme Court upheld that decision today. And as I say, it does appear to have limited scope, and the victory for Monsanto is somewhat tempered by the behavior of the farmer Bowman. But, gosh, couldn't we at least have had one dissent from a liberal up there just to try to show that Monsanto doesn't control the court? How about this? In Hungary, the nation of Hungary has taken a bold stand against Monsanto and genetic modification by destroying 1,000 acres of corn found to have been grown with GMO seeds. The Deputy State Secretary for the Ministry of Rural Development in Hungary has announced that they are going to rip the crops out of 1,000 acres, grind it up, and try to destroy the GMO seeds in Hungary. From my point of view, that's a lot more like it. In Pakistan, there were elections that followed a very violent campaign process, and then the injury to the opponent who lost, the soccer star. The named victor is former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. And it remains to be seen exactly what policies he will embrace. It's a very, very unstable situation. And Sharif is close to a majority in the National Assembly needed to govern outright for the next 5 years. So he appears to be in a much stronger position than Benazir Bhutto's husband, who ruled, that's Zardari, who had the job for the last 5 years. And so we will see how that plays out. And if we can find a more reliable ally in Pakistan in the future. And of course, part of that reliability problem is that we want them to be pliable to American interests and demands. And when they try to reflect the interests of their own people, that sometimes comes into conflict. Also, related to electioneering, there is a presidential election coming up in Iran on June 14th, and Friday was the deadline for people to declare their candidacies. There were two surprise last-minute entries. Former President Ali Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, who is elderly, he's age 80, and he ran last time and was defeated in that challenged election by Ahmadinejad. So he has thrown his headscarf back into the ring, and Ahmadinejad tossed out an ally of his, a crony named Esfandiar Mashaai. I apologize if I don't know how to pronounce his name, and you just heard me bungle it. And while Ahmadinejad is banned by law from formally endorsing him, he appeared on camera with him at the, I think it's the Interior Ministry, where they went to register for the election. Now, they still have to be approved by a clerical council, and so it's unclear whether they will actually get to compete on the June 14th ballot. Senator Barbara Boxer of California, an alleged Democrat, an alleged liberal, is good on some issues. But like so many Democrats and so many members of the Senate and the House, she often displays a deeper loyalty to Israel than I think she does to the United States, and that bothers me. The latest is that Boxer has introduced legislation that is one-sided and favorable to the state of Israel, and it relates to visa privileges. There are 37 countries that have reciprocity with the United States. Their people can come here without a visa. We can go to those countries without a visa. And so Boxer is proposing what appears to be a two-way street, but really isn't. She wants Israelis to be able to come into the United States without a visa. But we know that Israel discriminates in granting visas to those who wish to visit Israel, Palestine. And there's some well-documented examples. So Boxer wants to permit Israelis to come into the U.S. without a visa and stay for up to 90 days. And it's important to note that the State Department has officially advised travelers that American citizens of Arab or Muslim origin have experienced significant difficulties in entering or exiting Israel or the West Bank. They've been subjected to prolonged questioning and have been denied access to consular officers, lawyers, and family members. And the group called Jewish Voice for Peace cites the case of Sandra Tamari, an American-born citizen of Palestinian descent, a Quaker. She's from the Palestine Solidarity Committee in St. Louis. She went with an interfaith group of about 30 people to visit the West Bank a year ago. She said Israeli authorities pulled her aside at the airport in Tel Aviv, asked her about her family, her background, jailed her overnight, and put her on a plane back to the United States. While in custody, she phoned up the U.S. Embassy. And Tamari said the person who took her call asked her immediately if she's Jewish. And when told she wasn't, the voice at our embassy said, "Well, then there's nothing I can do to help you." Well, just another example of how American policy is so one-sided in favor of Israel, and it causes us a lot of problems. In Philadelphia today, Kermit Gosnell, the abortion provider, was convicted by a jury of 3 counts of first-degree murder for severing the spinal cords of infants from abortions at his clinic in West Philly. He was also convicted of involuntary manslaughter in the 2009 death of a 41-year-old Virginia woman who died from an overdose of drugs while undergoing an abortion at the clinic. And this case is a nightmare on a number of levels. It provides really rich fodder to anti-abortion activists in this country. And we're going to be hearing about Dr. Gosnell and the ugly truth. It is true. He ran a terrible abortion clinic. Unqualified people were dispensing drugs. It was described as a very unsanitary situation. Many corners were cut, and now we know that some laws were broken. The jury appears to be hung up on 2 charges, but there were a total of 260 charges against him. So that, whether they declare a mistrial on 2 counts is pretty immaterial. And I'm one of those people who continues to advocate for access to abortion, the right of any woman, to choose whether or not to go forward with a pregnancy. And when you consider the hysterical momentum that the right has built in moving to either deny access to abortion or just shut down the clinics entirely, this case is extremely detrimental to the right to abortion established under Roe versus Wade. Last week, I reported on the change of the guard in the Oakland Police Department across the bay from me. The rogue police department that has been under a court's supervision for some years now. Howard Jordan went into an instant retirement. He's only 47 years old, declaring he had unspecified medical issues. But the real problem was that the report issued later that day by the court-appointed monitor of the Oakland Police Department detailed his failings as the chief of police. He's only been there less than 2 years. So he resigned/retired. They appointed an interim chief who lasted for about 36 hours. On Friday, he said, "No, I don't want this job. Shove it." And so they appointed a younger cop who's been running the internal affairs department at the Oakland Police to be the acting chief. We'll see how long he lasts. Over the weekend, Elon Musk, who is the founder of Tesla, the electric car company, he owns SpaceX, he made millions or billions at PayPal. He told Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, I am out of here. They set up the political action committee called FWD.us. And the first advocacy in the form of political TV spots released by this forward group were just disgusting. I mean, they're stuff that Karl Rove would be proud of. Supporting offshore drilling, the Keystone XL pipeline, drilling in the Arctic. And it has nothing to, these issues have nothing to do with the alleged agenda of Silicon Valley. So I applaud Elon Musk. And I guess he's going to have to unfriend Zuck on Facebook. And finally today, last Thursday, during some time trials for the America's Cup sailing race that'll be held on San Francisco Bay later this summer, there was a deadly accident. The Artemis Racing catamaran flipped on the tip of one of the pontoons, the lower one that was in the water. And as it blown forward by the wind, apparently that pontoon hull cracked. One sailor was trapped, a man known as Bart Simpson. And he drowned because he was underwater for more than 10 minutes before they could get the craft off of his body. And I'm a sailor. I'm not really much of a racer, but I saw some of the trial heats for the America's Cup last fall on San Francisco Bay. It's pretty exciting. And because it's in the enclosed space of the bay and so many different people can watch it, it's not out on the open water where it's hard for people to tell who's leading whom. There are a lot of positives about the America's Cup. But this is a sport that is the play toy of billionaires. Larry Ellison of Oracle heads up the Oracle racing team. The Artemis racing team is owned by an oil billionaire from Russia. So this is kind of like polo, if you will. Only the rich can play. And as a sailor, I have to say that when I look at the minimalist structure of these 70-foot-long catamarans that barely have any stabilizing keel. Now, the keel is the part of a sailboat that goes down in the water, and on a traditional sailboat, that keel is loaded with lead, tons of lead. The sailboat that I'm a partner in is about 34 feet long, and our keel weighs 12,000 pounds. There is no keel on these catamarans. There is no stabilizing effect or counterbalance to the pressure of the wind on the sails. They have these little dagger boards that are flimsier than what you would find on a 14-foot sunfish or laser. And so I'm sorry to say that these catamarans are death craft. They are rockets on the water. It's like being, carried along with the wind behind a parachute. Very unstable, very hard to control. And this is not the first time that this kind of an accident where the boat was jibing and it tipped on the pontoon that was in the water and fell forward. One of the Oracle boats experienced this, I believe it was in December of last year. And so I don't want to see the race canceled, but I don't want to see another sailor die. What is the point of people dying to be able to say we set a new speed record and we beat the Swiss or something like that? Well, I hope that cooler heads will prevail. And it wouldn't bother me if they either go to the smaller catamarans that are more stable, or if they move to redesign all of the larger catamarans to make them safer. And if it costs them a few knots in speed, that's just fine with me. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. This podcast is free. Go ahead, pass it along. Thank you very much. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails. until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until